I think of us, yeah, like a cult indie worship band, which is just very niche. My struggle is way more with like all these other guys I know, like they got like one smash and it paid for their kids' college. Like, could I just get one, you know what I mean? That would be great.
The Profile with Premier Christianity Magazine.
Hello and welcome to The Profile here on Premier Christian Radio. I'm Jamie Pratt. The Profile is the show where we sit down with a well-known Christian to hear more about their life, faith and ministry. It is brought to you by the UK's leading Christian magazine, Premier Christianity, the monthly title that features more interviews just like this one, the latest news, reviews, columnists and more. Discover more and check out our best subscription offers now at premierchristianity.com. Today on the show, I'm speaking to Chad Gardner, lead singer of King's Kaleidoscope, an international worship collective, veterans of the Christian music industry, and creators of hits like Safe Retreat or The Beauty Between. You may have seen them live here in the UK at Christian events, or even as the music for hit podcasts like The Fall of Mars Hill. But more on that later. For Chad Gardner, the Seattle-based artist, King's Kaleidoscope was a real labour of love to get off the ground. From losing his church and his newborn, all while creating the first album, he shares with me how he overcame that adversity, how it affected his faith, and what they did to get kicked out of every Christian bookstore in America. Welcome, Chad. It's wonderful just to have you here today speaking with us. The first thing I'm going to ask you is that if you go on Spotify, your banner picture has you in an Arsenal football shirt. First of all, do you know this? And second of all, is this you secretly telling us you're a Gunner?
JJ, our guitar player and keys player, is a big fan. So that is him wearing that jersey, yes.
Oh, that's JJ, bless
you. That's JJ. It's not me, no. But JJ is always trying to get me into it, and I'm too American. I'm too into basketball, but maybe someday.
Do you like what we would call American football for you, football?
You mean my American football?
Yeah.
I honestly don't watch it very much, but this year, I'm from Seattle, and the Seahawks are in the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
my team. So I'm into it now. I'm going to be very into
you're
it.
You're a bandwagon.
Yeah. No, I like football, but mostly I just grew up playing basketball, so I'm into basketball.
No, that makes sense. And yeah, if listeners listening, this has been recorded a couple of days before that, before the Super Bowl.
Yes.
So we're going to be very excited for that. So when I was researching this, the one thing I was struggling to do is really accurately describe what King's Kaleidoscope is. Every label I give it feels like it doesn't fit the whole King's Kaleidoscope picture. For example, you've made traditional worship songs and you've done CCM, contemporary Christian music. You've dabbled in hip-hop, indie pop, sounds I'd describe as conceptual and experimental in the best possible way. How would you, Chad, as the lead singer of King's Kaleidoscope, how would you describe your band?
I have struggled with the same question for the last decade plus. You know, the origin story of Kings is that I grew up playing music in church. I took a job in church. I was a worship director, 18 years old, 19, 20, 21. And King's Kaleidoscope started around then, early 20s for me, just as, the group of people I was leading worship with at the church. So a lot of the traditional worship songs or like hymn arrangements that we have done a long time ago, and then now more recently, they kind of come out of that was the seed of the band, was that DNA. But after a few years of doing that, I actually ended up, feeling called to leave. I left that church, and then something I never really imagined doing, started writing songs, and they were much more, I call them like modern psalms. They're personal songs, they're testimony songs, they're faith narrative songs. And so that is the bulk catalog of our work, and that creates a very, diverse musical landscape too as well, because we might have Come Thou Fount that I arranged for church, a long time ago, but then as soon as we started really writing our own music, there was no limits on the musicality portion, because we weren't trying to kind of fit into the that like helpful box of like, can a bunch of different people sing this very easily on a Sunday morning for a worship service? All of a sudden we could just do whatever we wanted. And so musically, I've always been very eclectic. I grew up as a DJ. Our band is from all over the US. We're just an eclectic group of people. So we kind of have a lot of freedom, honestly.
I love that. So the themes kind of stay consistent, but like the genres, you can kind of go wherever you want to with them, really.
Yeah, yeah. I, like I said, grew up in the church playing music, but I really cut my teeth getting good at producing and making songs by DJing and sampling. Yeah. So instead of sampling records now, you know, I sample the band. They have all kinds of jams, and then I flip it and cut it up and chop it and make basically collage music with it.
And I can see that in some of your songs. Mm-hmm. Even with older King's K tracks, you'll have like a motif or a theme from that in a new one. And I love these little Easter eggs that you'll give
lots of Easter eggs
for people listening.
For sure. Brilliant.
So you just mentioned you're from Seattle and your band are all over the US or they're from there. Mm-hmm. What are you doing in the UK?
We're playing a show in London tomorrow at Coco. And we've never played there. Is it a newer venue or a renovated? I don't know about it, but we've never played there. This will be our... I want to say it's our fourth just proper club show in London, though. And we always love it here. It's one of our favorite places to play.
Wow, you keep coming back. You said it earlier to me, the rain that us Brits despise almost feels like home to you in Seattle.
It's the same in Seattle. Just nice and misty, a little gray all the time.
That's brilliant. And so you've been... When did you officially become King's Kaleidoscope?
2014. End of 2014, we put out our very first album.
We're coming on 12 years?
Yep. Yeah.
My word. So not many bands, not many worship groups can say
I know.
They've gotten to that. And we're going to hopefully cover all of that. But I want to go back. I want to go to a young Chadwick growing around Seattle, the Seattle area. How did faith come into your life?
I grew up in a Christian home and kind of in a, you know, a little bit of a lineage of serving the church. My mom's side, my grandma and my grandpa, they kind of helped build the church that I grew up at going to. My parents got married at that church. My mom grew up at the same church I grew up going to. I grew up listening to my parents, you know, practice music for Sunday. Right above my room was our living room with the piano, and my dad was playing guitar, and they'd have little, you know, worship band practice upstairs. So I'd fall asleep to that, and then I did music, kids choir and all that. And I didn't have like a really before after moment of knowing Jesus. I think as a very, very, very young kid, I had a lot of panic attacks and some health issues. I had a lot of, even 3 years old, my parents remember me having panic attacks, which is really crazy and really sad actually. But so I learned immediately from a very young age to talk to God about that, how I was feeling, to pray. And I, you know, would always imagine God with me in those situations, and I still do to this day. So it just, God's kind of always been there for me. And there's obviously wrestle and struggle and, you know, whatever my sense of manufactured disappointment is in him and all these things. But I've just always had that relationship. It's really just like another, I mean, not another, I would just say like the biggest family member in my family. It's just kind of always been there.
That's lovely. And moving on to music, I'm not a musician, but I do enjoy music. But are you one of those people where music was a language to discover? It just kind of made sense to you? Or did it, I mean, all musicians do,
sure,
but did it take craft and like, were you forced to do it and then you picked it up?
Yeah,
How did it come to you?
We, definitely, it's a pretty natural for me, especially rhythm. But me and my two sisters were, quote unquote, forced. We all had to take 5 years of piano lessons. And they actually liked it more than I really did not like it. I didn't like the structure of it. And so I did my 5 years. And as soon as my last lesson was over, I got a drum kit. And I, you know, really liked playing drums. But I taught myself how to play drums pretty much. So it came naturally. Plus, I had a little bit of the have to play, do the lessons. But now I'm grateful because I got a good baseline for music from those. So
yeah, it's one of those where I wish my parents were more insistent. So I'm glad you appreciate what they pushed you to do. That's really nice.
Totally. But,
you mentioned you were playing at a church, and we're going to talk about it a little bit and then move on. But you went and became part of the worship team or the worship director at Mars Hill. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So yeah, that was led by Mark Driscoll, and then it fell apart, essentially.
Yep.
And I just want to ask you, what stage was King's Kaleidoscope at when that happened, and how did it affect you guys as a band and wanting to create music, things
totally
like that?
Well, I mean, yeah, that church had a global impact and a major moment. And I was in high school when that was kind of, when it was like really popping and exploding. And so, but the thing, you know, the thing with a church like that is people go to places that are having big moments for a lot of different reasons. For me, it was primarily the creative reason. You know, I'm learning to even embrace how much of a contrarian I am. And that is like a fuel for a lot of the art and the things that I create. And I think that's okay. I've fought that a little bit in the past, but anyways, you know, for me, Mars Hill was, it was the church in the city, you know, down, like I could basically just drive in there as a high school kid, where none of the music came out of Nashville. None of it was cookie cutter. None of it was safe. Everything was experimental, and it felt super against the grain of the Christian music industry in America. And I loved that. Like, as a 17 and 18 year old, I just loved that. So I ended up just going there to volunteer. And then that's where I was a worship director for probably 3 or 4 years. And then I left before it collapsed. You know, it was just so unhealthy. And Mark was such a bad place of unhealth, and it was very toxic. So my wife and I got out of there. But then the question was, okay, the thing was we had started working on our first album while we were there, and we were probably maybe halfway through writing it. And when I chose to leave, and so unfortunately the question was like, am I still going to do this? They actually would not let me even buy back any of the tracks we had started working on, like the hard drive or anything. So it was like, I've never made an album before. We have no money. We have no church. We have no like community anymore. Both my wife and I worked there. We had no jobs all of a sudden. It was a crazy time. And we kind of trusted that the Lord was telling us to just do the next thing, make the thing, follow through, finish the record. So I just did it on my laptop, basically, in like my apartment, my parents' house, renting a studio for like one day that we could afford, 2 days we could afford, and we had to remake the whole album from scratch.
So Becoming Who We Are, is that what we're talking
about?
That's
the album.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So that's a real grassroots album, essentially.
I mean, we are very DIY through and through, all the way through we are DIY. We're very grassroots still to this day. But yeah, I mean, that album, we wrote half of it while I was still working at the church, and then I left, and then we had to re-record the whole thing, and I wrote the other half of it. But that transition was hard because, you know, the band, it's hard because you could say, well, the band was the band before the 2014-15 when we released that album. But the band was volunteers who are still some of my best friends to this day, who we were just, you know, we would lead every other Sunday or two or three times a month on church. It's a very different thing than coming to London to play a show and, you know what I mean, making our own records. So what happened is once we released that album, over the course of the next like 3 or 4 years, when we started a tour, that was where it was like, oh, all the people that are in this thing, they were, and I don't mean this in a bad way, they're like friend volunteers that were at a church who have other lives where they're like getting married or they're going to have kids, they have careers. And it's like, I can't fly to Chicago and do these shows or whatever. So we slowly had to get a new kind of team of people that were going to come to support what King's Kaleidoscope was and what kind of it was forming to be. And we've now had pretty much the same lineup of people since 2019. Took a couple of years to like make that transition fully, but it's been pretty stable since then.
I was going to ask you about that mm-hmm. you are pretty much, well, you are the only founding member, you can say, from the start. And do you think that in any way, for better or for worse, did that change the music coming out when you had different members?
I mean, I will say that the first two albums were primarily made with the same crew that were from the church. The Beauty Between album, actually, see, all the same people though are pretty much all the way, they're on everything. They're up to Zeal. They were playing on all the stuff. But in Seattle, they just wouldn't tour, you know? So it's pretty fluid. I will say that on the Beauty Between, we never thought of that as an album. We were like, oh, let's just do a mixtape before we put out our, you know, third real record, Zeal. But Beauty Between has some of our biggest songs on it, which is funny because we didn't think about it. I made it really fast too. But when I put up the Beauty Between, my mom said to me, you know, and she's watched me create, you know, beats and songs and stuff since I was 12. She's like, I think you're starting to actually sound like yourself. You're sounding more like yourself now. And so I've actually kind of leaned into that a little bit more since then and gone, okay, I don't have to make all these songs feel like a little bit like more like how I would have done on a, you know, Sunday service. Not that I was doing that fully on
becoming who we are. There's like, you know, I'm still singing with auto-tune, and there's a lot of crazy songs and like Dreams and stuff like that. But there is a variety left over from what we would have played at church, like How Deep or All Creatures. So, yeah. It's been a transformation, and I hope it keeps transforming. Like right now, the music we're working on for our next album is like totally different than the last one we put out. And I just, that I would say is one of the things you're talking about, how to pinpoint Kings is hard. It's because we're explorers, you know? And so like I said, we're contrarians. So we try to contradict ourselves a little bit as well. And always trying new things.
And I want to talk about that as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to say, was that intentional? It's cliche to say that every band's next new album wants to be a little bit different, but actually, mm-hmm. if you progress your albums from one to now six,
they really are, yeah.
They are quite different. And that was an intentional thing. You're like, we don't want to be almost like who we were 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, I think some artists are really good at that. Like, you listen to an AC/DC album, it's an AC/DC album. You know what I mean? Like a Chili Peppers, like, there it is. There's that spanky clean guitar and like Flea playing bass. And it's like there's bands that have a sound. And I think our sound is more of a, it's almost like really like, it's all kind of, all the musical elements hang off of my voice and sort of, I would say, my like lyrical perspective and like kind of the feeling that you get of maybe walking with Chad and like watching him walk with God or something like that in my stories that I'm saying. But musically, yeah, I think that the big gumbo pot and the crazy mixture of all the different influences and kind of like I was saying, that collage DJ style, if that is the brand of it musically, then you kind of can do a lot of different things and it still makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I always want people to feel really enchanted when they listen to our music, and I want them to be, there's some sort of like a beautiful, like hopeful longing underneath everything. But when it comes to actually like sonically, you know, what do the drums sound like and all that stuff, it can literally be anything.
Well, that's amazing to hear. And I want to go a little bit back to your story, back to that first album, because the church like collapsing or you leaving the church wasn't the only big thing that happened in your life. Sadly, you lost your son, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
And I just, yeah, we don't have to dwell on it too much, but just how did that affect you and your faith in the middle of making an album? Like all this stress is happening.
It was a lot. Like I said, within that 1 year, it was actually within a very short time, a few months. You know, my wife and I have left our church. So we both, all of a sudden, we had no income, no jobs, kind of left our community that we had there. Her father was diagnosed with brain cancer and passed away within like 10 weeks. We lost our son to a stillbirth. And then she also lost another family member, like a great aunt. She got in a car accident. It was a lot of crazy stuff all at once. But the way that my wife and I talk about that season is that, you know, how I was talking earlier about how I grew up with the faith, like God was just always there. And I've always had this conversational, intimate relationship with him. And my wife and I look at that season that so many things kind of hit at once. And we just say that it was a gift from God that the Holy Spirit gave us faith in that season. And nothing turned to like bitterness or, or jadedness or anger at either like the church at large, like just the idea of like people trying to organize a church and leaders being broken and things falling apart, or something as sad as losing a son, or, you know, struggling financially, all these things happening at once. We really did feel like we just had the gift of the Holy Spirit with us. And, I just want to, I mean, it's a cliche word, but I just wanted to say faith. There wasn't a moment where I just thought, and because all these bad things are happening to me at once, you can't be real, God. Or I don't want you to be in my life because you're allowing this hard thing to happen. I felt the whole time, and I still do, I desperately need you for this hard stuff. I don't want to run away from God when it gets hard. I want to run to God when it gets hard. And I see that as a gift from the Holy Spirit. I don't see that as like me doing the right thing or me being better than somebody else that's really struggling with that. I just really see that God has provided that perspective of like neediness to me. And it's really hard to feel that way. So I was like, I want to feel stronger often, but that's just the reality of like when things get hard for me, I usually run to God. I feel pretty weak in those moments.
No, thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, yeah, it doesn't have to be this huge big moment. You know,
yeah.
It comes in at that brilliant time. And actually, there's quite a British word, but it's like plodding. You're almost plodding with your faith. Like,
yeah.
Hand in hand with God, just slowly, just going on right. to the next thing.
Two pedals on a bike.
Yeah, stuff like that. So that's really lovely. And really thank you for sharing mm-hmm. about that.
Hi, it's Sam Hales, editor of Premier Christianity magazine. I'm proud to say we are celebrating our 60th anniversary. From our beginnings as Buzz in the 1960s to the vibrant multi-platform magazine we are today, our commitment to connecting faith with the world around us has never changed. To mark the occasion, we have a special offer of 12 months for half price. That's just £24 for print and digital access. Subscribe today at premierchristianity.com. Automatically renews at £47.99.
So you mentioned that the Beauty Betweens kind of when things either not necessarily blew up, but people started to say, oh, this is their sound. This is kind of their music. And what's life been like from that point onwards? Like, as you said, you kind of had a transition with band members, people who could only give their spare time. Now you've got people who this is their mm-hmm. job. What's that been like just to be someone who quote unquote made it?
Quote unquote made it. It always feels like we're still trying to make it. Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, you know, we finished touring a little bit for The Beauty Between, but when I say DIY, I mean, like, you know, that album was, the first two albums we released with Tooth & Nail Records, they're mostly distributors for us, though, honestly, like, everything was still very DIY. We barely toured. We didn't tour the whole first album, we played 6 shows in 2 years. We had no touring market, nothing. We toured the second album. Beauty Between, we toured just a little bit more. And that was at that when the touring was ramping up, that was when it was like, all right, we're going to need new people. And so I remember we had all the same crew making our fourth album, Zeal, which this is 2018, 2019. And we went to tour that album and it was like nobody could do it. It was me, my manager, and my drummer that we still have, Daniel. And we were like, well, who is going to be in this band, you know? And like I said, we kind of gathered people that were basically like, you know, tour mercenaries, like friends of friends, people I'd met for the first time. And we all went out on tour and we bonded so much that, you know, almost everyone's still in the band from that tour. So I would say that the big like at least personnel shift happened on that Zeal tour, which was our fourth album in 2019.
It's amazing. And so over this time, you say you're still making it. I'd say that you've probably, in terms of, made it. What helps you when you're going on tour, when you know, you go on YouTube and you see I've got X amount of hits? What keeps you grounded in those times? Because a lot of people with the platform you have, with the profile you have, can kind of go to their heads. What do you put in place, if anything, to?
Well, I would say that pride works both ways. You know, for me, the pride isn't look at how many plays this has and it goes in my head. The pride is, why doesn't this have more plays? That, and which is still getting in your head. It's still a distorted identity, basically, you know, where you're not valuing, like King's Kaleidoscope is big enough to tour the world, you know, in cities like London and all around the U.S., and I make a living off of it. And these guys, you know, the guys that come on the make songs in the studio with me and tour, we're all doing well. But I really struggle with the fact that our band has been a band for 10 years and does all of this stuff. And what's weird is there's really not a lot of other bands who can play big shows and stuff and don't have any hits. Like, that is a weird, this may be weird coming from, like, in the British perspective, but, like, in the U.S., there are so many other Christian acts and bands who are plugged in, I would say, like, networking-wise, in Nashville, which is where, you know, Christian music kind of is headquartered, and we're just not, you know, we never are on any radio stations. We've played one Christian music festival in the U.S. in the last decade.
Wow. Wow. You would not think that.
We're an international Christian band more than we are a U.S. Christian band. And in the U.S., we have like rabid, loyal fans. Like we're like a cult following kind of a band. You see what I'm saying? So you're talking about like me getting like I don't get a big head when I look at like YouTube or Spotify in the way of like, wow, look at how big these numbers are. Like I get the opposite where I'm like, you know, how do all these other artists who can't sell out shows or have been around not as long, like how is this streaming so much better? And a lot of it is just because the type of music we make is like there's a higher demand, I think, to get into it because it's pretty creative and it's pretty out there sometimes. And then also, like I said, we're just so DIY. We're up in Seattle. We do our own thing. I don't like hobnob really with anybody else in Nashville. Like people know who we are, but yeah. I think of us as a cult indie worship band, which is just very niche. You know what I mean? It is niche. And so my struggle is way more with like, you know, man, Lord, I really wish I could just have one. All these guys, other guys I know, like peers, they got like one smash and it paid for their kids' college. Like, could I just get one, you know what I mean? That would be great. So, yeah.
That's really interesting. And I think that reveals almost the difference between our personalities where I'm seeing it as like, you've got so, you know, like.
I know, but your perspective is right, which is like always like, look what God has done. Like a worship, you know, just a kid with really bad anxiety disorder who wants to just be a crazy musician. And now I'm around the world, like playing shows. Like that wasn't even my dream or trajectory. And God's had to hold my hand and carry me all the way through to get to this place. And he's enough with whatever, you know, even if I don't never get a big song to pay for my kids' college, it's still fine. You know what I mean? It's a lot for me. It's a lot to anyone else. Like his blessing is a ton. So,
and just to pep you up a bit, yeah. You've been hearing just around our station.
Yes.
What King's Kaleidoscope has been doing for the people here. So right. Just know that I just want to honor you in that.
No, like, for sure. That's what I'm saying. That is a true perspective. And once again, but even without any of that, you know, just being, knowing God and being his son is enough. And I want that to be more and more the case throughout my life. And if that takes God making King's Kaleidoscope less successful so I can get to know that more, that's fine with me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Last year you released Asaph's Arrows 2.
Yes.
And that's a sequel to your earlier EP from about 10 years ago. Yeah. A, I guess, why did you want to make a sequel album? And B, why did it take around 12 years?
Yeah. Well, back to that kind of that origin story thing. And also just like a little bit of kind of the worlds at King's Kaleidoscope. Like there's a little bit of like two things that it has done. King's Kaleidoscope, like I said, was me leading worship a long time ago where we arranged hymns and things like that. And people have kind of held on to some of those arrangements over the years. Some of the, like, for example, Come Thou Fount. That song, I mean, it might sound bad to some people. That song means literally nothing to me. I just arranged it for church. It's somebody else's song. It's a great song. It's like a song that'll be around forever in the church, but it doesn't have any like personal meaning to me. I arrange it for church services and people really love it. It means a lot to people, you know? So over all these years of putting out 6 albums and people kind of still streaming that stuff, we thought, you know what? We should probably just kind of, people who are blessed by that music, we should just make more of it. And so we released 7 more kind of more church oriented kind of hymn, some of them were hymn arrangements, put into that bucket. And we're going to do even more next year as well. And all of that music is going to live on Spotify, Apple Music, all, you know, Amazon, all the DSPs as King's Kaleidoscope hymns. And it will not be on the regular King's Kaleidoscope. We're actually going to separate those lanes. Because in also some ways, it's a different audience slightly. The audience that comes to the shows, that cult audience that's like, you know, that's very loyal that I'm talking about.
Like, we want the weird stuff.
Well, they're just like, yeah, they're just like, we just want to hear what chat, like we want to hear prayer. We want to hear your concepts albums. We want to hear, you know, we love the album Zeal and whatever, Baptized Imagination. They're into our original music. And that is by and large, the vast majority of our fans. But if you're talking about like, wide net casting I don't want to use like commercial ability. I don't know what word to use, but like something that has a higher utility for the average person, it is going to be a simple arrangement of Come Thou Fount, All Glory Be to Christ, sing along, easy chords. Like those songs are incredible. And I didn't want to like say like, we're not that stuff anymore because it's still the seed of who we are. But to be honest, it's like been, that's what you're saying. Like, what are you guys? If you look at that on the same Spotify page, it's like, I don't know, man. This is kind of weird. I'm confused. So we're kind of actually going to separate them out.
That's really interesting. But it's nice to see that you still want to honor those people.
Of course.
You still want to say, if this is how you're connecting.
Yeah, yeah. That's brilliant. We'll give an Amazing Grace arrangement to you guys. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I don't know if you can talk about this or not, but one of the songs, There's a Higher Throne, mm-hmm. that's been... Or at least you've recorded it, what must be 11 years ago, but it never made it onto the,
yes.
the albums. Can I ask why?
Well, I didn't write that song. Speaking of me being more of a producer arranger first and a songwriter second, I arranged that song, you know, I honestly didn't know better. The Gettys wrote an incredible song, and I totally just basically shredded it, changed the melody, changed a few words, wrote a different chorus to it the same way that I would, honestly, like a hymn. Because that's what I was used to doing when I was 21 at church. You know, I was like, I'd look through a hymnal, be like, okay, we're going to change this whole thing. We're going to change the time signature. So we did that to that song. Just made a live video of it on YouTube. And everybody loved it. It was like, can you put this out? Can you put this out? And the Gettys, which I totally respect, were like, you know, I mean, this isn't even our song. Like, this is not like our melody. You took a few words out, you added a whole thing. Like, and at that time they were just like, you know, they were respectful. They're like, we really appreciate what you guys do, but like, not right now. Anyways, all I have to say, all these years later, they came back and they're like, you know what? Like, that song's still here. People still like it. You guys can put it out. So
wow.
I'm so thankful to them. Our label talked with them and they were cool with us putting it out like that. So they're the heroes of the story.
Yeah, 11 years in the making.
I know.
That's incredible. Yeah. And you mentioned it earlier, but so often, you know, when I describe King's Kaleidoscope or I bring it up, people, I would say, oh, they're the ones who did Beauty Between. They're the ones who did the hymns.
Yeah.
And they're the ones who did a prayer.
Yeah. And so, yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And so can I ask you about a prayer? For the mm-hmm. for the listeners who don't know, I'm just going to not read the full lyric, but I'm uh-huh. just going to... For people who don't know, you released a song on your second album and you use a swear word in it. So the lyric goes, when I'm waiting in this silence and the fear is blank violent.
Yeah.
And whether people's issues with that or talking about it, whether that's justified or not, why did you want to put that in? I just feel like mm-hmm. that question will come up for people like, oh, they're those guys.
Yeah. Let's see. There's so many ways. There's so many angles to go about this with. I would start with this. We released two versions of the song. We released two versions of the album. We released a clean version and an original version. So if you're going to talk about it, like, what do you think about language theologically? I would just say I'm pretty ecumenical with that. We put out both. So I didn't actually have a hard stance on like, no, I'm going to say this word and you guys have to deal with it, you know? And most places we play that song, like, you know, if we're playing an event or a conference or festival, we play the clean one. So I'm used to performing that song pretty much both ways.
Do the crowd do the clean version? Or?
Well, I'll tell you, sometimes I have actually paused for that line and I just won't sing it. And I'll let the crowd sing whichever one they want, which is pretty interesting because you get people singing it both. But I will say that the other thing is if you look at like this is now all my perspective on songwriting. There's a lot of different ways to write songs. I have different ways of writing songs. I have songs that just happen and they come to me and they're more, I would say, like just kind of guts coming out, like spilling guts, you know? I have other songs that are like, I feel like they're way more like high craft. They take a lot of collaboration. They take a lot of like fine tuning. I'll sit with lyrics for weeks and be really messing with them. A prayer is not that. A prayer happened almost immediately. So it really did feel like the feeling I have when I think about the lyrics of that song is like going over to your friend's house and just sitting on the couch and literally like spilling your guts out and not editing yourself because you're with a Christian brother. In this case, you know, in this case, I basically spilled my guts out on that song, the section you're talking about, the first two verses. And it was so intense for me. I couldn't, I couldn't even go back into the song for like days and try to write. There's a big response at the end there where God responds to me in my fear. And, but even that response at the end, when I finally went back into the song after 3 days, that same thing, the response was like lightning. Like I tried singing maybe 2 or 3 times and then I just sang those words. You can actually hear me. I'm crying at the end of the song. Cause that's, I really feel like God is like speaking to me through the Spirit in that moment to sing that song. So that song is written in that format and then you just have it. And then you just start playing it for the band. And then you start showing it to my wife and showing it to the team. And it's like, what do I do with this thing? You know, it's like, well, you can't put it out like that. And it's like, well, yeah, I know. But like, what do we, is it, it's so intense. You know, I guess I could edit it. And then it starts to be like, well, it's a testimony. Why would you change that? Oh, well, because like you're going to get banned from Christian bookstores and like you're not going to get festivals. And I don't know, man. Well, back to the contrarian thing. Like just my role, the way that God's built me, looks at that and goes, why would I play that game? That's not my – some people, that is their game to play. For real. I really think like Forrest Frank is built to play that game. Make family-friendly music for the world. You know what I mean? And like – and like be the polar opposite of like Juice WRLD and like crazy trap rap. Okay, that's great. But for me, that's not my role. I'm not like so we just decided let's just release both. I'll make an edited one and let's put it out. And it will be, you know, honestly, also it was a consideration of we just put out our first album. We barely toured it. This second album, and the first album had some kind of hymn stuff on it that were left over from when I was at church. This second album is really more like, this is a King's Kaleidoscope album. Let's just establish like what we are going to be doing in the world. And this is what we want to be doing in the world. We do not want to be playing the evangelical America, like, you know, machine of entertainment game. We're not going to do it. So that's exactly what happened. We got banned from all the Christian music festivals. We got kicked off of them. We got banned from all the Christian bookstores. They took all of our CDs out of it. And it was a pretty crazy time.
That is a really fascinating story.
It's a fascinating story.
Yeah, because it's what, I guess you've got integrity involved and you've got to be yep. like, what am I willing to give up to get to this place? Or yep. if I'm not going to give this up, then right. am I, where is the Lord taking me after that?
Right. So it's funny because people think we would do it to be edgy.
Yeah, I guess you
but
got
like,
to
be like, we do
yeah.
it out of integrity. And I'm not talking about like creative integrity. Like there's creative integrity, but there's also just like, I just don't believe that in the body of Christ, we have to clean up. Like, is this entertainment or is this testimony? And it's kind of both. You know what I mean? Like it's tricky. But like that song is a testimony song and I just don't feel like it should be like cleaned up. And I will say, we were talking about being in Denmark. We played Denmark 2 days ago and after when we go that far across the world, like I try to meet as many people as I can, you know, there were so many kids and almost that I talked to after the show and almost every one of them that had a specific song. It's only that song. It's only that song. That song has like we did a trip to New Zealand to play shows because of that song. You know, they like you please play this song here. It's just there's different perspectives on language, but the reality is that song has, you know, it's saved people from committing suicide. Like time and time again, we get stories of people who it's been deeply, deeply, deeply impactful to. And so I don't regret anything of the way we've put that out. I will say though, we did. When we got our masters back from our label and we had to re-upload the music ourselves, we didn't upload the clean version because nobody ever listened to it. But so there's only the regular one on Spotify. And I feel kind of bad like thinking about this. I was actually thinking about this the week telling my manager, like, we got to put that up sometime because there's somebody out there who wants to listen to the clean one.
Oh, the poor guy. He's trying to find it.
I know. I feel bad now.
It's interesting that you bring up Forrest Frank. Yeah, we've mentioned how you've been officially a band for 12 years. You've been performing music for way, way longer than that. How have you seen kind of the Christian music world change? Because at least in the UK, and I'm sure mm-hmm. it's happening in the US, we're seeing what we're calling a quiet revival. So we're seeing the spirituality in young yeah. people especially come through. Have you noticed that in like the Christian music world, if that's possible?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, if you go back to like when King's Kaleidoscope started, there was really like, I mean, it was different, man. Like we didn't put our first album, maybe our second album, on Spotify till like a month after. Like people used to like buy, that's how old we are. They used to actually like download it, pay for it on iTunes. You know what I mean? And then stream it afterwards. So I think that pretty much now, one of the big differences I would say creatively is that King's Kaleidoscope's formation was a little bit of an antagonistic. We want to inject some like hyper creativity into a pretty just homogenized space. You know, like Hillsong kind of sounded pretty similar to Jesus Culture, pretty similar to Elevation or what, whoever that was the band.
So you wanted to be a reaction to that.
I just think we were. I mean, like, this is a youth. Like, youth just is a reaction. Like, youth to me is, like, tearing down to rebuild and then learning in the process, like, all right, this was worth tearing down, this wasn't. But youth is also just the camaraderie of tearing down and rebuilding. And I think it's kind of unavoidable, you know? And I think I probably will have some of that in me as old as I ever get.
Yeah.
But because that's just, like you said, the contrarian thing. But now, when I just think about the way that Instagram and TikTok work, you can literally think, if you want to think of a type of quote-unquote like creative Christian artist, you can find it. Like just think, literally think about it. Like I want maybe like, is there Christian neo-soul? I guarantee you there is. You will find it. Is there Christian, like is there a Christian hyper-pop? Guarantee you'll find it. Where's a Christian K-pop band? You're going to find it. You know what I mean? So
the access is there
and every kid in the world or every, you know, grown up, they can make anything they want and find an audience for it, which is pretty sick, actually. I just think it's way more diverse and way more creative than it ever was when I was growing up, which is kind of what, honestly, like I wanted to be part of influencing that as a band. And hopefully we have had some part in that over the last decade.
As you said, there must be some people who've come to your concerts and think that's what I want to do. And we're sadly running out of time. It's flown by, but yeah. I'm going to ask you just a silly question at the end. Mm-hmm. Now, I've often heard that for musicians that the songs that they create are kind of like their babies, their kids. And I'm not going to get you to pick your favorite kid.
Thank you.
But is there a song that you're particularly enjoy like performing at the moment when you're going on the set list what is that one? We've got about a minute.
I got it already. The problem with putting out six whole albums at this point is that we have songs now that I'm like worried I'll never beat. Like I'm like, dang it, I peaked on that song. You know, The Rush is this like three song thing that when we play live, it's always our like favorite thing to do. It's 9 minutes long. It's insane. It's never going to be like a top streaming song, but it's always goes off like the hardest at every single show forever.
The problem with that song is that if you've got your playlist on shuffle,
it doesn't go in order.
Yeah, you're like, ah.
I know. Yeah, you can't. We make albums, not shuffle music. Yeah, that's for sure.
Oh, that's brilliant. Chad, thank you so much. We are sadly out of time, but it's been such a blessing just to hear you and just that almost, you say that antagonistic hub. I think that's integrity. We see you bear your soul and your band. We see them bear their souls on your albums. And I think that is, you know, often a unique thing for Christian music sometimes. So thank you so much for bearing your soul with me there.
Of course.
And I hope to make it tomorrow, actually. So
yes.
Yeah. So,
well, thank you so much for having us.
All right. See you there.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.